Hello, everyone. My name is Greg, and welcome back to the podcast, My First Season. In this podcast, I interview people who worked in holiday/ski resorts, hotels, and cruise ships, and we'll talk about their first season in the hospitality and tourism industry. My guest today and I worked together in Club Med Cancun in 2004-2005, where I found him to be most hysterical. Everyone, please help me welcome Mr. Bobby D. Bob, how are you?
Hey, Greg. Couldn't be better. Thanks so much.
Did you like that intro?
Yeah, it was a sterling intro, and I couldn't possibly overstate how flattered I am to be invited on the podcast.
Even though I can't remember parts of 2008, I do remember when you heard JK introduce you for the first time, you told me you only want JK to introduce you from now on because he called you Bobby D, and it was awesome, so I thought I'd throw that in there.
Right, JK is a good guy.
So, spoiler alert, we did work together in 2004-2005 in Cancun, Mexico. You were the animator, correct?
Yes. I remember how I made your acquaintance too, because I was playing guitar at the Palapa right off the ocean. And someone asked me if I could sing happy birthday to Swan. Oh, and I said, well, two things. I'd love to, but I don't play happy birthday, believe it or not. I don't know the chords to happy birthday. And I don't know who Swan is. So then she pointed you out. Oh, I recognize that guy. And we became fast friends after that.
And they thought you thought they wanted you to serenade a bird or something, right? When you heard Swan, I guess.
No, by then I was pretty familiar with the idea of geos having unorthodox names.
Yes. Yeah, you have a few out there. You have Lunchbox and Adrenaline. So I guess Swan is, kind of low key compared to some other ones that I know.
Yeah, I never met Lunchbox.
Okay. Me neither, but I hear he's a great guy. So Bob, if you wouldn't mind, I know a lot about you, but not much before, for Club Med. I know nothing about your first season, really. So I was wondering if you can take me back to that time that was before Club Med, like where you were living, what you were doing. How the heck did you find out about Club Med?
Yeah, well, I grew up in the Northeast in Ridgewood, New Jersey, about 15 miles from New York City. And then I ended up moving to New York City. I worked at a video post-production facility for 8 years. So that was my first career. I wanted to be an editor. But after 8 years, the company was slowing down and they let their night staff go. And that included me. So I figured as long as I'm being laid off, I should probably make a go at my expressed interest. And I always enjoyed entertaining more than behind the scenes stuff. So I made that my mission and I put together a resume packet, a video reel of special skills and interests. I submitted it to agents in New York City and then eventually to cruise ships. And I got hired by Disney Cruise Line, the Disney Wonder.
Yes.
They called me. They were the only cruise line to respond to my resume campaign. And I told them I wanted to entertain. They were offering me a job in cruise staff, which is similar to the animation team at Club Med. The difference is at Club Med, everyone in the animation team or entertainment team has a specialized duty. But on the Disney cruise ship, everyone shared the same duties. And it didn't sound like it was cut out to entertain guests as much as facilitate parties like 70s night and 80s night and bingo games. And so I respectfully declined. And I told my parents about it. They said, Bob, I don't think that was really smart. I mean, that's the only company that called you back. You need a job. That's a pretty well-established company. Just because you take the job doesn't mean it's going to be your end-all be-all. See what it leads to. You should call back and see if they'll still take you. And believe it or not, that same recruiter beat me to it and called me a second time before I had a chance to call back. And I was just humble. I said, I think that I answered too quickly last time. And if you're still interested in me, then I would be honored to take the job.
Okay. So what year is this around?
This is 2003.
Okay, great. Okay. Wow. Did not know that. Okay. So how many seasons or years did you do aboard the Disney cruise?
I was on the Disney Wonder for a contract and change. And each contract there was 4.5 months. But here's how I learned about Club Med. I was having lunch in the crew mess hall with a couple of my teammates. One of them was an ex-GO. And the subject of dating presented itself. And he described a little bit of what his life was like when he worked for Club Med. At Disney, it's very regimented. It's very restrictive. And it just sounded instantly appealing because it gave me the impression that Club Med treated the employees more as independent adults. And I had a feeling that I would be a lot happier on their land resort than on the cruise ship, living out at sea, working 7 days a week. And I had a friend back in New York who he'd been going to Club Med for a lot of years. He was a guest artist. He played the drums. I told him about this conversation with the XGO. He said to me, "Bob, I told you months ago that I could get you a job at Club Med in 2 minutes." And I said, truthfully, I don't really remember that conversation. I don't know why. I went home from the Disney cruise ship eventually for my vacation. I put together another resume packet. I gave it to my buddy. And then he promptly went on vacation to Turks and Caicos. And he submitted my resume package with 8x10 photos of me performing and my VHS tape of my special skills and interests. And he just handed it directly to the chef de village. And I was really eager. I was really hoping that this was going to work out. And I said to my buddy, you know, what is your, in your opinion, what do you think the chances are that you're going to get me this job with Club Med? He said, if I had to put a number value on it, I'd probably say 100%.
So rather than apply to Miami or New York, he took your packet to the chief at Turks. Were you applying for a Club Med artist position?
No, all I knew was that I wanted to make a parallel move in the vacation and tourism industry. It's just that I figured I'd be happy with Club Med. I wanted to be able to play guitar. I wanted to be able to sing. I wanted to be able to dance, maybe even rap for the guests. I just didn't know what the brand of entertainment was at Club Med. I was just trusting his judgment and figuring that, you know, I've flown by the seat of my pants this far. Might as well see if I can get the job at Club Med and see what it affords me. But I just had the feeling that it was going to be more direct in terms of being able to entertain the clientele.
Had you ever gone to a resort vacation before?
I hadn't, no. Okay. I did go to Martinique with my folks when I was a teenager, but it wasn't an all-inclusive resort. It was just, it was a beautiful hotel, and then there were activities in the area that you could sign up for, but it wasn't the same communal experience you have with a bunch of other guests.
So how long after your friend submitted your packet did you hear something from the manager at Turks and Caicos?
Pretty soon. I had gone back to Disney for my second contract. And I think within 10 days, we were in port, which is the only place you could use your cell phone. And I got a message from Club Med. And I called back immediately. And I forget the name of the person with whom I spoke, but she invited me to join the Cancun Geo team for the winter season. This is late 2003. And I accepted with great alacrity. And I went directly to my computer to type a letter of resignation for Disney.
You went to Cancun in 2003?
Yes, November 2003.
November, okay. Interesting. So this person that called you, were they from a head office or were they from someone in the resort at Turks or at Cancun?
I couldn't be sure, but if I was a betting man, I would say it was somebody in an office.
Okay.
And I think the chief of village at Turks and Caicos, can I say his name?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
That was Paul Langus.
Okay.
Yeah. I think he just took my friend's recommendation and my resume and said, that's good enough for me. Hire this guy. So I never went through a traditional interview.
Okay. Interesting. Did they tell you where you would be working when they called you?
They told me I was going to be an entertainer in Cancun. Okay. It's just that I didn't know exactly what that entailed.
Okay, so you pack your bags, you go to the resort. Do you recall who you first met at the airport? Was there a geo there to greet you?
Probably was. I don't remember that. I do remember arriving in the village in a shuttle, and the DJ Wedge was his name, was the one to escort me to the casitas area where the geos lived and gave me a mini tour on the way. I remember seeing a huge iguana, and I wasn't used to seeing iguanas. Most people in the States probably aren't, especially from the north. And he said, don't worry. They're not aggressive. It looked like a mini dinosaur to me at the time. And then I got my bearings in my room. And then I became really familiar with the geckos. I love the geckos. The more geckos I saw, the happier I was, because I knew it meant fewer insects in my room.
True, but I remember geckos from Playa Blanca. But what about that really high-pitched noise they make in your room late at night?
Do they bother you?
Yeah, they do. I had one in Playa Blanca that just would not leave, and I searched for it one night, and I couldn't find it. But you're right. They do eat scorpion eggs and insects, but I just found that noise they made at night really hard to see.
I didn't even know they ate scorpion eggs, but now I like them even more.
So about how long after your first week in Cancun did you know what the job entailed? Did you have more information about what you actually did?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My first day, in fact, is when I met the outgoing entertainer. And his name was Danilo. He's from Italy. And he is the one who gave me the overview of the entertainer's job. And Danilo was great, Greg. I mean, I could not have asked for a more supportive and helpful person. Because I don't know, a lot of people, you take on a new job and there are people who train them who don't put their heart into it, either because they're lazy as trainers or because they feel threatened and they don't want to give away all their trade secrets. And Danilo was the antithesis of that. He was so unselfish. He was so helpful. He was really nice. And yeah, I lamented that we only had 5 days for him to train me, but I did get to see him in action doing the entertainer job. And, you know, it turns out that the entertainer job at Club Med, you're ostensibly a court jester. It's all about physical comedy.
That's what I was going to ask you next. So how much of it did you create on your own? Because I was always amazed at the stuff you'd pull out when, you know, for our season in Cancun. So I was always curious, how did you come up with this stuff, or how much of it had you seen before? Like, had Danilo showed you?
I would say Danilo gave me the basics on about maybe 12 to 15 different characters that he did. Some of them he just described, so I didn't really get to see these in action. But one of the characters that he would do, since he was really comfortable doing things that were kind of brash and slapsticky, but he really pull them off. One of them was Bumblebee, where he would dress up as a bee and he would sneak around the village. He would get behind somebody who might have been sunbathing at the pool or at the beach, and he would tickle their ear with a feather. And the idea is to make the person being tickled think that it's a mosquito or a gnat doing it. And so then they're slapping at their head, trying to get the gnat away, but they don't know that it's an entertainer behind their chair doing it. And the more people that you can engage who see you out of their peripheral vision and watch you messing with people, the funnier it gets. And so there was that. He did a flasher character where he would walk around in a trench coat. And then once he got enough eyeballs on him, he would open the coat and he'd be wearing nothing but a big bushy wig as a loincloth. There were others that he did. So I basically adopted the ones that worked for me and modified them to fit my performing personality, and just abandon the ones that didn't work for me. And some of the best advice Danilo gave me, he said, do the characters that you're comfortable with and avoid the ones you're not. And it's really smart advice, because you can't be funny if you're not comfortable.
Okay. I'm going to flip back between our season in Cancun and your first one, only because you kind of, you mystified me and you amazed me. So there's,
thank you.
To me, there's two type of animators / entertainers. There's the ones that stay in character and the ones that don't. So I put you in the extreme. You were so method that I recall you know, that long, lonely walk down the road to where the Geos lived. You would be ending a passage, but if you happen across one of us, you would stay in character. And whereas you didn't have to, but you still did. And that just, I love people that go for it, that like, don't break character until the DVD commentary is over. Were you doing that in your first season, or did that just develop over time?
I think that's one of the things that I had an aptitude for. I mean, the things that I've gotten good at, I don't consider myself really talented. I just consider myself really determined. And whether it's, you know, singing or guitar or dancing, it required a lot of practice. But when it came to doing characters as the entertainer, this was one of the things that came most naturally to me. And to me, it just seemed to make the most sense to stay in character until you're back in the dressing room and you're finished with that routine. I don't think there's anything funny or cute about doing a character halfway than, you know, just sort of smiling and acknowledging that, oh, it's just a routine. As far as I'm concerned, it's only funny if you are 100% immersed in it. And I've never been that funny a guy by virtue of the things that I say. You know, I don't think that I would ever do, I wouldn't be a candidate for stand-up. But the things that made me funny were doing inane characters. And then, as you say, just sticking in it and that, staying in that bubble and being really intense. And the more intensely you're doing some inane character, the funnier it gets. And I figure, why should I step out of character for the GOs? As long as I'm in the village and I'm dressed up and I'm in character, I might as well just treat everyone I see as someone to entertain.
Well, we appreciated it, believe me, like more than you know. I certainly did. So I guess it's safe to say when you got there, most geos, when they get to a village, you know, they probably didn't want to do their first job and they look around to see what else they can do. So were you happy staying in that role?
Well, I was happy doing it, because there was, it would never got boring. There were so many different characters to do. So in response to the earlier question you asked about how many did I develop, I probably adopted 10 to 15 of Danilo's characters and modified them, and maybe innovated another, I don't know, 10 to 15 of my own. But it was so much fun, and it was really well received, even though it took about 2 or 3 weeks for me to get my costumes. First few weeks, believe it or not, were really difficult because Danilo left with his trunk full of costumes, and I had barely anything to work with. Still in all, I knew that I was going to be equipped with a bunch of props and different outfits. But there was one other job that I had my eye on, and that was Village Musician. I thought that was an even, you know, sexier title. And it's really where my passion lies. You know, doing the acting, the comedy, and the funny stuff is really great. But my true passion is in playing music and singing. So I met the Village Musician my first day. It was an 18-year-old guy named Ryan Rick. And I just remember being so impressed because I was almost 33. And I'm thinking, it took me this long to work up the courage to take a job of this nature where I'm outside my comfort zone. I'm in a different country, a multicultural environment, and I have to learn this new job. And he hasn't even been a legal adult for a year. And he's already, you know, taken on that same kind of challenge. And he had so much confidence, and he was a good musician too. So I wanted to do what he was doing eventually. That was my hope.
So I've heard that, I mean, the hours on the cruise ship are pretty intense. So you it was probably a smooth transition for you to know that, well, you know, you had to work 6 days a week, roughly, you know, 12, 16 hours a day. So I guess coming from cruise ship, you were already ready to take on resort life, right? In the hours that you worked?
I was. The cruise line, I felt, pretty much worked me to death. And it was a 7 day a week job. And one of the things I knew about Club Med was about 2 years before I got hired, they switched from a 7 day week to a 6 day week. So I knew I was going to benefit from 1 day of rest every week. So I wasn't ever worried about having a shortage of energy. The longer the days, believe it or not, the better the days. It was just so full of activity. I mean, if I'm doing 3 or 4 different characters a day, that adds up to a bunch of positive attention right there. And then when I would be on break, it would be that much easier to make friends because people would want to talk to me about the character I just did. So then came the music part, because Ryan, he's a Village Musician, but he's really unselfish. And he knew that I played guitar and sang too. He would often ask me if I wanted to take the first half of his set, which was really cool. A lot of musicians wouldn't do that because they wouldn't want to give up the spotlight. You know, Ryan didn't have that problem. He's really confident, really mature person. In fact, he was 18, I was 33, but I always deemed him about 7 or 8 years more mature than his age, and myself about 7 or 8 years naive for mine. So it was like we were best friends and we were both 25 years old. But, you know, being able to do these routines all day, then being able to go play a guitar set in a happy hour, and then getting to do specialty numbers in the show at night. I don't want to say that I was just living off of adrenaline, because it sounds kind of cliched, but I didn't really want to miss a minute. So I was naturally energized, and I would sleep as late as I could in the morning and then get up just in time to ride my bike to the restaurant before the buffet closed so I could have breakfast. But I figured I could, you know, sneak in a couple of hours of sleep in the morning that I might not have gotten if I was working some 40-hour a week job back in a city where you have to get up, you know, really early. And here I didn't.
Was the clientele on the Disney cruise ship about the same as the one in Cancun? Were there Europeans on the cruise ship?
No, the clientele was a lot different. And that had a lot to do with why I was so much happier working for Club Med than I was working for Disney. Because Disney, by definition.
I was going to ask if you had any kind of culture shock when you got to the resort at all. But seeing as how you've already, you know, were on a cruise ship, I thought maybe you got all that ironed out. There was no culture shock when you got to Cancun about anything, really, right?
No, it was actually the opposite. It was actually finding myself more in my element, because the Disney cruise ship, by definition, that's family entertainment. And Club Med Cancun in 2003 was an 18 and over village. So within all adult clientele, it just felt, you know, more mature, and you were less bound by certain rules. And you're able to eat with the guests. I mean, at Disney, you weren't allowed to even eat with the guests. The only thing I would say that was a little bit jarring, it was a French company. So I didn't speak any French. I'd had Spanish education in middle school and high school. And since I was now in Mexico, I vowed, all right, if I'm speaking to any locals, I'm going to speak to them in Spanish, even though I'm not good yet. I figured it's the respectful thing to do. I just think if you're living in another country, it's your obligation to learn the language of that country. So even though I'm in a vacation resort and I didn't have to, I decided for my own sake that I did. So if I was speaking to anyone from Mexico, I would speak Spanish. But the French, I didn't develop an interest in French for a couple of years yet. I figured I'm assimilating to two jobs, basically, entertainer and now I'm part-time musician. And I'm improving my Spanish every day, but taking on French seemed a little bit overwhelming. But eventually I would.
Since you weren't allowed to eat with guests on the Disney cruise, were you shy at all when you had to eat dinner with guests at every meal?
No, on the contrary. I love making acquaintance of new people. It's great. I mean, the GOs are only allowed to sit two GOs per table. And that way we would be integrating with the guests and making them feel more welcome. And if the GOs were allowed to eat together, it wouldn't have been very interesting at all. But being able to eat with the guests, you know, you're basically the focal point of attention because they're always curious about the life of a GO. And I felt particularly uninhibited having meals with them, especially since invariably by the time I sat down with them, they recognized me from one of my comic routines that I had done before. So, you know, there was a built-in interest. And there's one thing that they would almost always ask me as a first question. And I would use it as a way to just tear through the formalities because I don't like small talk at all. If you were to tell me what question you were most frequently asked when you would sit down with a table of people, what would it be?
Oh, geez. I know someone made a top 10 list, but
just the number one question. If you can't think of one, I'll tell you what mine was.
Okay. Yeah. No, let me hear yours. I can't believe I can't remember it, but yeah, you go ahead.
Okay. The question I was most frequently asked was, okay, how long have you been a GO?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And I would just say, who cares? Why are you asking me that? I said, okay, I'll ask the questions from here on out. And they would understand. They would get it. You know, it was never said in a condescending way. They could read me. You know, they inferred that, oh, he's not putting me down. He's just saying that he hates small talk and he wants to get that out of the way. And I would. I think that's a real impediment. I don't like the small talk. So I would just get into deeper things and it would usually result in a much more genuine conversation and a stronger rapport. But yeah, I love eating with the guests.
I do recall a GO from the past making a shirt that had all the answers, pre-printed on the back so that, so Crest One would be about 4.5 years, he would go down the line, he would just put the answers to save time, which I thought was cute. I'm sure he didn't actually wear it in the restaurant, but
yeah,
the same questions do keep coming up. So did you ever, and one of your comedy or entertainment passages, did anyone ever get irked by something you did and told you about it later? Or did they say like, oh, you know, Superman's cowlick is really an inch and a half long. Yours is only an inch. You know, did you ever get any constructive feedback or not so constructive feedback?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. I mean, you're never going to please 100% of the people. I mean, if 95 to 98% of the guests thought I was good, then I was winning. And I was very happy. But of course, there'll be some people who don't get it or don't take to it. And the most jarring incident, I think, was when I was relatively new because I did this routine that Danilo taught me. And it was this busboy routine where you dress as someone who works in the restaurant and you take people's tray if they get up to get something else and you get rid of their food. And it didn't seem that funny to me, least of all now. But I remember saying to Danilo, isn't that kind of rude? Or isn't that irritating? He said, oh, it's a buffet. They can get more. So I was new. So I figured, all right, I'll try it. And I threw out the food of this guy named Sig, as in Sigmund, right? Later that night, he got me back. I was doing a routine as a scuba diver /snorkeler, where I would be on my belly on a skateboard, quote unquote, swimming around the restaurant, low to the floor, kicking my feet with the flippers on and had a snorkel mask on. You know, most people, they would just see me out of the corner of their eye and laugh because it's a ridiculous place for someone to be doing that. But Sig grabbed me. He actually put his weight on me. He's a big guy. And he said, that's it. You're going down the stairs. I had no idea who it was because I couldn't see him. I didn't have any peripheral vision with my mask on. And then he starts rolling me on the skateboard towards the top of the stairs. And I don't feel myself slowing down. And I really think he's going to throw me down the stairs. And I dig my hands into the marble so hard that later on he would joke and said that my fingers left grooves in the marble. He didn't throw me down. So I ripped off my mask and then we had a little altercation. He pointed out that I had thrown out his food earlier in the day at lunch. It was the end of that passage. That comic routine was over for the night.
Okay. Yeah.
And believe it or not, we ended up making friends about a year later on a subsequent trip of his to the village.
Okay. Oh, great. At least I had a happy ending to this one.
Yeah. But for a moment, it was really unnerving.
If I recall, you liked participating in the shows, right?
Oh, of course. The shows were really the primary reason I took the job, in the sense that I hoped I was going to be in the shows. Yeah.
So when exactly did your, like your, I know you did a killer Michael Jackson routine. So I guess, where were you or how old were you when you started putting that together?
It was 1984, I think. And I first saw his performance of Billie Jean at the Motown celebration in Pasadena. And then I just made a point of learning his steps. So I was a teenager when I first started doing it. And I would take that routine to the middle school dances. And then I would dance to a song at one point in the night, and people would circle around and watch. And then I took a break from it and got back into it in high school and college. I did it. And then I took a long break from it and then got into it again pretty soon before my Club Med stint.
Okay, I'm going to reference our time in Cancun, because, and it's a big, one of the biggest blunders I've ever made. Okay, so you, unbeknownst to me, you would do this skit, passage, whatever you want to call it, before the show. You would get into a full wetsuit and you would run suicides on the dance floor. So yeah. Those of you who don't know, I'll work up to where I'm going. So suicides is where, like a basketball drill, where you go, you touch a line, you run back, you go further, you touch a line. You were so avant-garde that I thought you were doing a bit, and I was so embarrassed to ask you or anyone else what it meant, because I thought I was stupid for not getting it. I only found out, I think, when I left the resort, that you were actually warming up. This was your way of warming up for Billie Jean. Is this correct?
I was warming up for the cabaret in which I would perform Billie Jean.
Yes.
And whole, oh my gosh.
The whole time I thought you were doing a bit, and I was just so embarrassed to ask you because I didn't understand it. You know, I don't want to be made a fool of, but.
Well, yeah, I was basically doing like agility drills outside on the volleyball court. And this was a mistake, because I was basically warming up for the Billie Jean routine as if I were warming up to run a 400 meter dash at a track meet. But it wasn't necessary to put that much energy out before the show. I should have just been stretching. And a lot of times when that number would start and I'd be on stage with my black sequin jacket and my black slacks and loafers and fedora hat, and then the first beat would start and I would slam the hat on my head, and I would be thinking to myself, gosh, I'm kind of tired. So I was definitely working too hard in preparation for that number. And another thing I learned was that the song was too high for me. And it was my third contract where the engineer, my good friend Danny Allaire, lowered the key of the song by, I think, 3/2 steps so that it was more in my range. So it's a learning process. Everything is.
I think it was the wetsuit that was throwing me. Maybe that's why I thought, yeah, there's something more here. That maybe if you hadn't worn the wetsuit, I would have got it, but it wasn't a wetsuit. I'd never seen anyone in 10 years do that. So I thought, man, this guy's really bringing it. I don't even know what I'm looking at, you know?
I'm sure a lot of people who had been going to Club Med for 10 years saw me doing things they'd never seen before too.
did you have time to learn any new skills while you were there? Was there a sport that you hadn't tried that you did, or?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, apart from the comic characters that I developed, I got water skiing. I was scared to water ski when I got there. I had no intention of even trying it, because I had heard that there was a crocodile named Albert who lived in the lagoon, and it just didn't seem to jibe. I'm thinking, all right, so we've got people who are water skiing daily in the same lagoon. They're sharing this with a vicious reptile. I changed my mind one day, and I decided to try it. I failed miserably. I was so embarrassed. I was afraid I was going to hurt my bad shoulder. But then every time I saw a water ski geo for the next 7 days, I would have him or her help me with a dry land lesson of how to get up on your skis. And then I tried it again for real a week later, and it worked out. And you know, it's no big deal. A lot of people water ski, but for me, I felt like I slayed a dragon. I was so excited with myself. And I eventually got asked to do it in the show, not because I had any special skill at water skiing, but because the actual water ski geos needed a little bit of time to prepare for a more intricate number. So I would do a pass in my Spider-Man suit. And then as they drove the boat past the pool where all of the onlookers were, I would just sling a faux web at the guests.
Other than your story about the skateboard scuba almost gone awry, do you have any funny, appropriate stories that happened that first season? Like, could be something happened on an excursion, or when you went to Carlos and Charlie's, or I don't know, anything in the resort happened?
My job was basically to play pranks on people multiple times per day. So if I were to really answer that question, it would probably appear more in the form of a montage of me just getting over on guests. One of the things that I like to do most was dress as a shark. It was just an adapted routine in the restaurant where I'd be on the skateboard, but instead of flippers and a mask, I would have a fin on my back and paint teeth on my face and swim up to scare the guests and grab the chair and thrash around or grab the woman's foot and bite the top of it. And she'd be banging on the table. Yeah, I mean, it's really almost unquantifiable the amount of pranks that I was able to pull off. One time I was dressed as Spider-Man and I was on the beach and I saw a guest sunbathing, and my MO is basically to just sneak up on people, and then when they would sense my presence, I'd open their eyes and they would laugh because they'd see someone in a really authentic Spider-Man suit. But as I was leaning over this guest, noticed a huge scar right down the middle of his chest, immediately retreated. I figured, let's not give a heart attack to an open heart surgery survivor. Probably wouldn't be the best day.
Good call. Very good call. Was there anything about resort life you didn't like? I mean, I know we probably like three quarters of it. Was there something that you didn't like or you liked at all?
Barely. I mean, it almost felt unfair. I thought I was having more fun and having more joy in my life than I ever anticipated. It was basically a lifestyle that I always somehow hoped for vaguely, and a level of happiness and fulfillment that I always hoped for vaguely, but I never really had any realistic expectation of when or how it would play out. But when you just consider that I'm in a tropical village, a warm wind coming off the sea, I get to do all these funny characters. I get all this credit for being funny. I didn't even know I was that funny until I started this. I get to do my favorite musical numbers on stage. I'm playing guitar and singing. So I was basically the happiest version of myself. It was really.
Yeah, there's people that cool. Have it a lot rougher than we did.
But you asked me if there's anything I didn't like. And I will admit to you that my first few weeks, I thought that the line dances we did called Crazy Signs. Yeah,
that was my next question.
Yeah. I to be perfectly honest with you, and just to be clear, I suspect that a lot of your listeners know what crazy signs are, but if anyone doesn't know, it's basically just another way for employees to integrate guests into village life by leading them in simple line dances. But I saw a geo up there with a microphone, and it just felt so inauthentic to me because the moves seemed ridiculously easy. It felt like something you would see at a sweet 16 party or a bar mitzvah or something. And it was almost as if the geo were acting as if he were the front man of a band or something. And I'm thinking, this is so over the top and silly. You didn't write this song. You're not singing it. You're just telling people to step to the left and step to the right and turn. So, I mean,
you just described every crazy sign. Clear,
yeah. And I want to be clear that I changed my opinion over time. I grew to really like the crazy signs, especially when Joker or Handel administered them. Didn't you do one?
Yeah, I did a couple.
Yeah. In fact, I even think I invented one or two. But which one did you do?
Well, I had brought one from Asia there called Hong Dong, but I did like I'm probably the biggest I think everyone knows I really didn't like Crazy Signs, but I never wanted it to show in my face. Even I have a favorite one. I have a favorite one called Absolutely Everybody by Vanessa Amorosi that, you know, I first learned in Australia, you know, in 2000. And now I might even hear this song in a grocery store. To this day, I have to physically restrain myself from moving left to right and clapping my hands. Like, that's how my body just
that's
wants
funny.
To react. But do you have a top three favorite crazy sign? If you do, I'd love to hear them, what they are.
It's funny that you asked me that, because my feeling is that I bet you almost every GO only knew Crazy Signs, but I recognized them the first few bars once the song came on. I suspect most GOs would not know the titles of almost any crazy sign that we did.
Muevelo is coming up a lot. Everyone seems to know Muevelo.
Muevelo, yeah. And then there was one where it sounded like it was in Spanish. This sounded like it was being sung by these demon children. Like, toma que toma que toma, toma que toma, yeah. Que toma, toma,
oh,
que toma,
I,
que toma.
I love that one.
I like that one too. And there was one that I invented to Rebel Yell by Billy Idol, although we didn't do it very much. And then one I invented later in Martinique to a song by Joselito called Chica Bonbon. But my favorite was the one that where you and I innovated our little routine. Do you remember that?
Oh God, I do recall the routine, but for some reason I'm blanking on the song. Oh my God, my memory.
It might have been called "Freed from Desire."
Oh yeah, did it not involve some kind of martial arts or something?
Yeah, there were three sections where the person leading the crazy signs would just encourage the guests geos to improvise.
That's
so
right.
During those improvisational segments, there were three of them. For the first two, you and I would square off as if we were boxing, and you would land all these shots, and we would just affect choreography as though it were from Rocky, and I would go down to the canvas. You'd knock me down in both of those first two improv sections. And the third one, I would come back with my fancy martial arts kicks and finish you off with a spinning back crescent kick.
Yeah.
And you should have been the entertainer in this moment, because you were as focused and committed as I ever was. And then you would just go down into this area of foliage, bushes,
yes,
at the base of a tree.
That's right.
and then get up legitimately looking like you were dazed, and I would break character. I was laughing at you.
I would try to sell that kick to the face so many times. We had ample opportunity to rehearse it, and even geos would come up to me later like, "Oh my God, why did he kick you?" And I thought, we just did our job. But it's things like that after 10 years of crazy signs that made me happy, because you can actually take a Freed from Desire and make it something so bizarre that, you know, you'll be interested in it again. And yeah, that was like a highlight that
I remember the
song. I mean, thank you for reminding me of the song. But man,
yeah, it's not only great when people give you credit for staying in character, but when they actually think something serious is going on, then you know you've really arrived as an actor.
Yeah.
One time I did a hobo routine on the beach, and the guest put some change in my cup, and he said, "Now get out of here before I slap." and he was dead serious. He didn't know I worked there. So I walked away, and then I walked back to him, and I said, "All right, I have to give this back to you, because I don't want you to see me approaching other guests and attack me. I work here, okay?"
That's perfect. Okay. Were there any employees or managers that stood out to you your first season that, you know, in a positive way, that it could be their work ethic or their personality, someone that you were like, "Wow, this guy's great. This girl's great."
Well, yeah. And I fear that it's going to be the same answer you might get from other people who work for this guy. But Hendel Duplessis, the chef de village, was the single greatest motivator I will ever know in my life.
Okay, wait. Was he the chief in 2003 when you got to the resort?
He would become the chief. Now, when I got there in November, there was no chief of village.
Oh.
The guy who hired me ended up getting terminated by Club Med. And I'm sure you remember there was an article written by Jane Magazine that painted Club Med in an unflattering light.
Oh, yes.
And I think he was the scapegoat.
Then Club Med sent Hendel there, right?
He was the casualty. So yeah, the chief of entertainment was the interim chief of village for about 3 weeks. Then they brought in Kevin Batt for about a month.
Yes.
And then Hendel came in January, and he took over for the remainder of that season and the subsequent two. You were there.
So you had the choice to stay then. So your second season was also in Cancun then, correct?
Second and third.
Okay. So you stayed by choice.
Oh yeah. I probably would have stayed for a fourth and a fifth if it were an option.
Okay. Great. All right. That's, were there any GOs other than the chief of village that you looked at and were impressed by?
Well, most of them. And I was especially by the second season. And I'm going to tell you why. My first season, although it was great, there was some adversity. You know, it was a little bit difficult assimilating without an established chief of village. Then Kevin got there, and he had seen me in both elements, musical and comedy. And I told him one day, "I really would like to be the village musician, even more so than the village entertainer." And he said to me, "I don't think that's where your talent lies." And it was such a shot to the gut. He even knew that it hurt my feelings when he said it. But music was more of a newer endeavor to me at the time. And so my feelings were hurt, but I figured I'd use that to motivate me and improve. And to my credit, by the second contract, they didn't even bring back a village musician. They were letting me tackle both duties full time, both animator and village musician. But there were some other things that were hard to work through. I mean, there was someone from reception. I don't remember his name. He said to me within my first couple of days, "I just want you to know you have really big shoes to fill." And he was essentially saying that Danilo was so good, was so funny, was so popular, that he didn't think that I would be on that level. And it wasn't really necessary. I really couldn't imagine someone saying that to a brand new employee working outside of his country and trying to assimilate to a new job. And I already have all this pressure on me. People are telling me your job is to be the most visible GO, to be the most popular GO. You have to make everyone laugh. And now he's telling me this. So I thought that it was kind of rude. He said, you're that American kid that just speaks English, right? And I answered him in Spanish. I said, pues hablo un poco de español también, which means I speak some Spanish too. And he said, yeah, but not that much.
So
right. I mean, this first contract, it wasn't the smoothest transition. I'd never really loved transitions, but there was a woman in the boutique who took exception to my style of learning, because I really wanted to get over the hump and know what I was doing as soon as possible. So I was asking questions and taking notes, and it just seemed a little bit more businesslike than most GOs. And she said to me one time, I think you should be working for IBM, not Club Med. So, you know, you just have to work, you know, through these. But getting back to your question, the second season started, and that was when Handel was able to bring in his team. So now we're dealing with GOs that he would have handpicked. And even though there were a lot of people in that first contract whom I liked a lot, the quality of the team really went up in the second season when Handel had full autonomy on who was going to be working there.
Yeah.
And he just had a more
professional
air.
Yeah. Newer GOs didn't realize what he was doing, but yeah, he totally stacked that team with a lot of Club Med legends there.
Yeah.
Yeah. The best of the best. That's why I constantly have people on from that season. You know, it was the dream team, you know.
Mm-hmm. It was obvious to me because, you know, there weren't any more elements of jealousy. I didn't see any more backbiting. It just was a much healthier, more positive dynamic. And I'm glad I had the hard one too, because you work through that, it gives you character. But I much preferred, you know, the working with the team that Handel had handpicked.
Did you meet any celebrities or musicians your entire time at Cancun?
Sure. I met a supremely talented singer from Canada named Patsy Gallant.
Oh, really? She came by? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. She was there my first contract, and she even did a concert for the village one night in the theater. Yeah, I remember sitting with her at breakfast, and you know, she was just as humble as any guest. And then we got into the subject of performing, and she told me that she was a singer in Canada. And then I subsequently ran into her again in Martinique. And by then we were more like friends. And there was also a Mexican soap opera that came to the village to shoot for 1 week. And there was one of the actors was also a singer. His name was Yair. And I think he was on some kind of Mexican equivalent to American Idol. And so he was pretty famous at the time. So I don't know if he remained that celebrity, because I only came into contact with him for a short amount of time. But since it all ties in, right before I worked at Club Med and I was still on Disney, I worked with Jennifer Hudson.
Oh, that's right. She's probably, yes, the most famous person to work on cruise ships to win an Oscar, I believe.
She has to be. She is obviously the part of the main stage cast.
Yeah.
The only one.
She won the Oscar for Dreamgirls, if I recall.
Yeah. 2006, I think. But I worked with her in 2003, and she would sing the song Circle of Life in the show's finale. And the main stage cast would enter through the back of the theater where I would sometimes be working as an usher. So every time I would see her right next to me, she'd just appear out of nowhere. She would smile, and I'd give her a ritualistic kiss on the cheek to say, you know, good luck, and just as a show of respect. But she was great. And then it was 1 year later, I think she was on American Idol.
Did you have any inclination when you were working with her on the ships and you saw her singing, like, wow, someday that lady's going to win an Oscar? Was it there?
Yeah, her talent was undeniable. I mean, everybody knew that she was incredibly powerful and charismatic and had this amazing tone and sustain. I didn't know it was going to play out the way it did, because there are a lot of really good singers who don't become famous. A lot of really good singers are famous, aren't even necessarily as talented singers as many of them who don't become famous, for that matter. But she definitely deserved the success that she got.
So after Cancun, you mentioned you went to Martinique.
I did 3 contracts in Cancun, and then I didn't have an assignment because Club Med was phasing out entertainers at that time. That's something that I just thought about recently. But you know, a lot of the entertainers, from what I understand, in different Club Med villages kind of relied on just that sheer rah-rah energy, or, you know, dressing in drag or stuff that was just deliberately spectacle and not necessarily tied to some kind of intricate joke or premise or routine. The Club Med was starting to move away from that job. The entertainer job was disappearing. So I got there just in time, really, so that I got to do it for a while and enjoy it. But, you know, Handel made a case that Bob's really good. And so he finally found an assignment for me in Ixtapa. So So I finished out the last 2 months of the summer season in Ixtapa. Then I went to Martinique and then finished in Cancun. But by then the tenor of the village had changed drastically. It wasn't an adult village anymore, for one thing.
Which season, I like to prescribe the word magical. Did you find any of the seasons that you did magical more than the others?
Yes.
Which one?
Well, I'm going to have to say my assignment in Cancun. If you're going to ask me which of my first three seasons was the best one, it's hard, but I would probably say the second of the three. But all three were incredible, and they were leagues above any other assignment I ever had. I suspect a lot of people would say, oh, every village I worked in had its merits. Every assignment I had its respective strong points that they all mean something good to me. I'm not going to give you any political answer like that. No other assignment or village could come close to measuring up to my first assignment in Cancun, when it was a three trident village under Hendel Duplessis, adult village, 18 and over. The languages are English, French, and Spanish, and I'm the entertainer. You give me those ingredients, and I'm gonna do well. But yeah, it's not close.
Okay, no, that's good to know. But that, yeah, it really was a special time, Cancun. You know, for me too. It was just the amount of talent that was there. I thought when I joined in 2004, having no idea that the team was going to be so stacked, like Red and Freddie, you know, and Simon, and you know, so many people were talented there. So you felt you had to step up.
It was so obvious. You're right. I mean, we had an incredible water ski team. We had an incredible circus team. Yeah.
Well, wow, Bob, I really want to thank you for sharing your story with us. I learned a lot from you. I didn't know, and you brought me down memory lane with Freed from Desire. So I really wish we could put that on one more time, because getting kicked by you right now would be such a highlight.
Oh, wouldn't it be fun? I'd love to take a roundhouse to the face from you too, Swan.
It really means a lot that you came on. And do you have anything last words to say?
I want to just, even though it's kind of predictable, I want to say how much your friendship meant to me and how much Hendel's friendship meant to me, because he was in fact the greatest chef de village anyone could ever conceive of. I mean, it's no secret how fair he is and what an excellent communicator and problem solver he is, and just how genuine and real he is. But it means more to me because Hendel and I had to work through some stuff early on, because I didn't really have the routine down when he arrived. I missed a few meetings. I was by myself most of the day, so I didn't have the benefit of teammates. Say, hey, remember we have that meeting tonight. So I might be in doing a comic routine instead of being at the meeting. So I had to eat crow. I looked kind of dumb some of the time. And meanwhile, I was recovering from shoulder dislocation. So there was a short time there when Hendel just arrived that I wasn't really fully in my element, and I had to prove myself to him. And as I healed and months wore on and the routines were going over better and better, I felt like I was really earning his respect. I remember one time after a show backstage, he said, Bobby D, you got so many compliments this week. And it really touched me. In fact, when I finished that three contract assignment in Cancun, he said to the audience during introductions after a show, guys, this is the most talented entertainer I've worked with in 11 years at Club Med. And I can't even begin to tell you how much that meant to me and how that made my heart swell up. So, you know, it's a very valuable friendship, and he sets an excellent example. Most leaders could never equal what he does.
High praise indeed. Yes, all deserve. Well, Bob, thank you once again for joining me on the podcast, my first season. Thank you for listening. We'll see you later. Bye.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it.